The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
And now, The Trumpet Daily with Stephen Flurry.
Hello again, everyone, and welcome back to the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. Great to be back with you. Lots to get to on today's program. A couple of comments coming in from you listeners. This one says, yay, I'm watching the replay because I was still sleeping when you were on. Got to watch you. Love the show. Another one here says, check out page 77 of Brad McDonald's booklet, The Holy Roman Empire in Prophecy. History, it says, is being repeated. Most definitely. Thanks for your radio program that tells the truth. So I'll have to check out page 77 when I get back to the office after today's program. Another one here says, this media should try living in mainland China. They might change their views. And then finally, the magical illusion. This would be a reference to yesterday's show. It said, would it also be part of the strong delusion? That's a reference to 2 Thessalonians 2. And, of course, my father has a lot to say about that in Malachi's message to God's church today. A couple of emails, too, in response to the commencement address, the address that we played at the end of the program on Monday. This here says is from California. It's an inspiring time of year to see God's church advance to the next round of their godly development. I appreciate your commencement speech to the AC class of 2020. I was especially inspired by the example you gave from General MacArthur, a man most Americans see as a war hero. And I, too, was raised in school to appreciate MacArthur's sacrifices to help America win World War II. It says this man's character, endurance, fortitude, and love for his nation is truly inspiring for today's youth in God's church and to everyone. It says compare that to today's 2020 commencement speeches from the universities of this world, all of them given virtually. He mentions the Clintons. Barack Obama had an address here recently. And then the performers, all the celebrities, Beyonce, Taylor Swift, and so on. And, of course, you think about some of the addresses that we give to the students here at God's College, whether it's the commencement or forums, assemblies, the lectures that we have for classes, and we just carry on and move on to the next subject, not thinking as much about the topic choice. But when you compare it to what's offered in the world, it really is, as we said, even in that commencement address on Sunday, it really is so unique. God's truth, it's so precious. It's so valuable. You just don't get it anywhere else on earth today. If you want to go back and look at that commencement address, it's in the Monday program, and we're also preparing a video for later this weekend as well. Well, I'll start today's show by just giving you some statistics and comparisons between New York and the state of Florida. New York State has had 14 times the number of coronavirus deaths than Florida. And Florida has, as I've covered, a larger population. And also early on in this crisis, in the pandemic, you had quite a few New Yorkers that were fleeing to Florida. People that had a second home, for example, a winter home in Florida. Quite a few New Yorkers were flying in. This was reported several weeks ago. But again, to compare the two states, New York has 364,000 cumulative positive cases of COVID-19. And as of this morning, 28,758 deaths. 28,758. That's in a state of almost 20 million in population. That amounts to 1,478 deaths per million. 1,478 per million. Now, to contrast it with Florida, Florida's had 47,000 cumulative positive cases of COVID-19, 47,000 compared to 364,000 in New York, and then 2,096 deaths for a population of 21.5 million people. 21.5 million. That amounts to 98 deaths per 1 million residents in Florida. 98 per million. In New York, it's 1,478 per million. So why this huge difference? And how is it that Governor Cuomo, the governor of New York, is held up as a hero? And Governor Ron DeSantis, quite the opposite. He's attacked. He's attacked for what he's done in Florida. Or, as we'll see from the Miami Herald, what he supposedly hasn't done. DeSantis, in a recent interview, he said that he required all staff and any worker. This gets to why the numbers are so different. He required all staff and any worker that entered nursing homes to be screened for COVID illness, to have their temperatures checked. He said anybody that's symptomatic would just simply not be allowed to go in. So quite unlike what Governor Cuomo did in New York, you'll remember, he sent COVID-positive cases into nursing homes. And Ron DeSantis kept them out. Going back to those crucial weeks in mid to late March, they took two very different approaches. Rich Lowry at the National Review, he recently did a feature on DeSantis. And there's a section in this article, this is just from, I believe, yesterday. But there's a section under the subhead, Learn from the Evidence. So it's basically analyzing what Ron DeSantis did early on in the early stages of this crisis. It says, at the outset, DeSantis looked at South Korea's experience. And then it quotes him. I just thought it was so dramatic, said DeSantis, the extent to which this was concentrated in the older age groups. I think the first real fresh set of South Korea numbers I looked at, I think it had no fatalities under 30, and then 80% of them were 70 and above or something like that. It was really, really dramatic. And so here is a governor in the United States that looked at, as soon as the statistics started coming in, he looked at the stats. He looked at the evidence. He looked at the facts. And this informed his decisions for his state. Then there was Italy, it says. I think a lot of the policymakers in the U.S. acted like Italy would happen in the United States. But when you look under the hood of Italy, this is, again, quoting DeSantis, there were huge differences and there were reasons why that part of Italy fared so poorly as it did. I think the median age of fatality was something like 82 in some of those areas in northern Italy. So we looked at that. But that really helped inform the strategy to focus most of our efforts on the at-risk groups. So going in, he focused most of the efforts in Florida on those who were the most vulnerable. This would be the elderly. And of course, Florida has a lot of elderly people. It says here he was hesitant about sweeping lockdowns, given that there wasn't much of a precedent for them. And then it quotes DeSantis again. It says, one of the things that bothered me throughout this whole time was I researched the 1918 pandemic, 1957, the flu outbreaks in 57 and 1968. And there were some mitigation efforts done in May 1918, but never just a national shutdown type deal, says DeSantis. There was really no observed experience about what the negative impacts would be on that. So, in other words, a national shutdown. It had never been done. It says here, so I was very concerned about things on that side as well. And I think that's why I had more a more nuanced and balanced approach than some of the other governors, because you have some of these health officials saying, you've got to do this. This is the science. Or whatever. But really, these were uncharted territories. You've got to do this. This is the science. But look, it's never been done, a worldwide lockdown. And what about the side effects? Well, now, of course, we're seeing that the cure is far worse than the disease. Rich Lowry at National Review, it says, the DeSantis team also didn't put much stock in dire projections. It quotes him again. We kind of lost confidence very early on in the models. This is quoting a Florida health official. We look at them closely, but how can you rely on something when it says you're peaking in a week, and then the next day you've already peaked? Instead, we started really focusing on just what we saw. I love that. Here's a health official saying that what we focused on, not the model, not the projection, not the doomsayers, we focused on what we were seeing. We were looking at the evidence in front of us. You had South Korea come in first. You had Northern Italy. All right, let's look at those regions. Who's most affected by this? Where is the greatest danger? Who are the most vulnerable? Over at the Federalist, they're actually writing on this National Review feature by Rich Lowry. And it says that DeSantis was really surprised at just how hostile the media were toward him and his administration, toward the whole state of Florida. Who can forget those images of spring break, mid to late March? And oh, the media, they were outraged. This is just going to spread the disease, and it's going to be worse, far worse in Florida than anywhere else because, well, they're being so careless, so reckless, and then they have a lot of older people too. The Federalist says, for instance, the mainstream media made it conventional wisdom, Florida would be hit hard by the coronavirus pandemic because of their roughly 350,000 residents in nursing care facilities across the state. But the state took practical measures to mitigate the spread of the virus for such facilities. And it's quoting DeSantis again, who says, we advised before there was even mitigation, if you're 65 and older, stay home as much as possible and avoid crowds. And that just that was just something that made sense, he said. Meanwhile, this is from the Federalist. Meanwhile, New York's Democratic governor, Andrew Cuomo, issued an advisory for hospitals to discharge elderly patients with COVID-19 back to nursing homes. Nursing homes and long-term care facilities alike are struggling to protect their employees and residents from the coronavirus because they lack adequate protective equipment. Many facilities are also short on staff, which requires staff members to interact with more patients, both healthy and ill. In other words, it's spread like wildfire through those nursing home facilities. Once you discharged those COVID-19 patients from hospitals and ordered them back into the nursing homes. Chris Cuomo, who hosts his program on CNN, he's made a regular habit of having his brother, Andrew Cuomo, the governor of New York, on his program. And here they were last night just yucking it up over a recent test with a swab for the governor of New York. Clip 9.
Is it true that this was the swab that the nurse was actually using on you and that at first it went into your nose and disappeared so that in scale, this was the actual swab that was being used to fit up that double barrel shotgun that you have mounted on the front of your pretty face?
They have that much time for the comedy when so many people have died. They're so critical, so many of them, so critical of President Trump. If he says or tweets anything, that's not about how serious this pandemic is. They can't understand it. And here they are yucking it up. As if they don't even know that 95,000 Americans have died. 95,000 Americans are dead. And there they are laughing about the supersized cotton swabs. Rich Lowry says in the National Review, an irony of the national coverage of the coronavirus crisis is that at the same time DeSantis was being made into a villain, New York Governor Andrew Cuomo was being elevated as a hero. Even though the DeSantis approach to nursing homes was obviously superior to that of Cuomo. He's the villain. This is your media today, the mainstream media in the United States. DeSantis is the villain, and Cuomo is the hero. New York, the fatalities in New York, 14 times worse than Florida. Switching back to the Federalist, it says the media has a clear agenda in the wake of the coronavirus pandemic. Champion the Democratic governors and slam Republican governors. It doesn't matter whether Republicans are doing well or whether Democrats are doing poorly. The goal of the media is to alter reality to make it fit their narrative. That is their goal. It just has to fit their narrative. Which goes right back to what we were covering yesterday. This new era of magical realism. It's so magical. And the models, they just keep coming out. There was a headline yesterday from the Daily Mail. More than 5 million Americans will be infected with coronavirus and 290,000 will die by the end of July if social distancing isn't adhered to. You mean like the way Florida approached it a month and a half ago? Here come the headlines. If you loosen these restrictions, if you let go of the lockdown, we're looking at maybe 300,000 deaths by the end of July. But that's okay, as long as it fits the narrative. Never mind the statistics. Never mind the people most vulnerable. Never mind the approach that Cuomo took as opposed to DeSantis. Never mind the fact that we now have plenty of evidence. And, you know, the hits keep coming as far as the media hostility toward DeSantis. This is from yesterday. You can see maybe when you see the pictures of the beaches, you can see maybe where some in the media would jump to conclusions. You could see maybe why they were outraged at that. But now, this is from May 20th. This is from yesterday. This is from DeSantis's home state. This is from the Miami Herald. And it says here, Florida knew a COVID-19 pandemic was likely, but state leaders did not warn the public. They didn't handle this crisis the right way. It says the records obtained by the Herald show that Washington, D.C., where President Donald Trump routinely downplayed the threat of the virus, wasn't the only place where pandemic concerns were being muted. It was also happening in a state run by DeSantis, Trump's close ally. See, he's an ally of Donald Trump, so they're both villains. Don't look at the statistics. Look at our evidence. They're villains. They talk about records that they've obtained, these mysterious records, whatever those are. It says Trump was concerned about spooking the stock market. Florida relies on a healthy image to attract tourists, including the crush of young people who flock to the state's beaches for spring break. It says further on, this is the Miami Herald hit job on Governor DeSantis yesterday. It says, from the beginning, the DeSantis administration, including the DOH, appeared to approach this pandemic from the perspective of managing their image and managing the crisis from a public relations standpoint and not from a public health standpoint. This is incredible. Given the statistics that I just gave to you, this thorough, in-depth review by Rich Lowry, DeSantis explaining what we analyze. Data coming from South Korea. Data coming from Northern Italy. The Herald says here they seem to be playing games with public records. No, it's actually the media who are playing games with the truth. It's actually the media that are caught up in this new era of magical realism. Governor DeSantis met with the vice president yesterday. And here again, the press, they came out to see the two, and they went right after Ron DeSantis. And let me tell you, he unloaded on them, so much so that I think the vice president, if you look at this footage, he doesn't look so comfortable as Governor DeSantis. Just lets the media have it. Here's clip one.
Our data is available. Our data is transparent. In fact, Dr. Birx has talked multiple times about how Florida has the absolute best data. So any insinuation otherwise is just typical partisan narrative trying to be spun. And part of the reason is that because you got a lot of people in your profession who waxed poetically for weeks and weeks about how Florida was going to be just like New York. Wait 2 weeks, Florida's going to be next, just like Italy. Wait 2 weeks. Well, we're 8 weeks away from that, and it hasn't happened. Not only do we have a lower death rate, well, we have way lower deaths generally, we have a lower death rate than the Acela Corridor, D.C., everyone up there. We have a lower death rate than the Midwest, Illinois, Michigan, Indiana, Ohio. But even in our region, Louisiana, Mississippi, Alabama, Georgia, Florida has the lower death rate. And I was the number one landing spot from tens of thousands of people leaving the number one hot zone in the world to come to my state. So we've succeeded, and I think that people just don't want to recognize it because it challenges their narrative, it challenges their assumption, so they got to try to find a boogeyman. Maybe it's that there are black helicopters circling the Department of Health. If you believe that, I got a bridge in Brooklyn I'd like to sell you.
Last question.
That's Governor Ron DeSantis yesterday talking about the death rate in Florida. It's one of the lowest in the nation. 98 per 1 million. 98 per million. In New York, it's 1,400 and what was it? 1,478 per million. You can see why he wanted to vent there just a little bit. Because the coverage, the magical realism, the fake news, all of these fictitious headlines, all of these bogus garbage models. What did his health official say? Well, we just started focusing on what we saw. We started focusing on the facts. Right out there in front of our faces. We were looking at the numbers. We were looking at the ages. I think of that section in 2 Timothy 4 where Paul was encouraging Timothy to just preach the word, preach the truth. And they're not going to want to hear the truth. And that's what he was saying to the media. You don't want the truth. You just refuse to accept the truth. Even when the facts are right in front of your faces. The Miami Herald, of all places, of all newspapers. Here they are going after Governor DeSantis saying that, well, he was just concerned about his image. Who's concerned about his image? Governor Cuomo's on those noontime press conferences every day. You know, the best thing about that governor is that he gives a good press conference. They love him. He's a smooth talker. And then he gets on his he's on his brother's program more than he's ever been. He's a celebrity from all of this. He's worshipped. He's a hero. If you're interested in looking at the facts, however, New York, it's the worst in the world. The worst in the world. Well, there's pockets in the UK, not far behind New York City, because they took the same approach as Governor Cuomo. They emptied out the NHS. The hospitals, the hospital beds, and sent COVID-positive patients back into nursing homes. And so we've seen a nursing home tragedy, a nursing home massacre in the UK, much like we saw in New York City as well. Historian David Starkey, we've played some clips from him for our Churchill class this past year. A really sharp individual, historian. He's written all kinds of books on just about every historical subject, it seems. But he was, I'm not even familiar with this program. He was interviewed recently. I think this was on May 16th. And he talked openly and directly and bluntly about the nursing home massacre in the United Kingdom. Here's a clip from his interview, clip two.
I think it's impossible to exaggerate how dire the state is. We've committed economic suicide. And I think it's really very important to be quite clear here. We talk about it as the COVID-19 crisis. It's not. It's a specific political crisis, which bizarrely, everybody seems to have got themselves into, starting with the Chinese. In other words, it's an extraordinary version of the emperor's new clothes.
Extraordinary version, he says, of the emperor's new clothes. Here we're just, here the emperor is, he's out in front of the crowds, naked. And everyone pretends that he's wearing this incredible attire, this gorgeous, regal attire. We just all have to play along. And when is the child going to show up? Just a little child, and say, what is going on? He's naked, he doesn't have any clothes on. The reason why you have to keep stressing this is because the lockdowns are still in place. Now, they're being eased in the United States, and I guess really all over the world to some degree. But the UK is probably, they're probably the slowest to come out of it. And yet, listen to this historian. We need more historians, by the way, because they help to keep it in. Now, there's plenty of revisionist historians, don't get me wrong. There's quite a few historians that don't know much about what they're talking about. But here is a historian that's just giving us some perspective. He's giving us some context. He's looking at history and the history of disease epidemics and comparing it to what we're seeing today. Here's a little bit more from his interview, clip three.
But what is peculiar about COVID-19 is it's not actually a very serious disease. If you look at the numbers affected in Britain that we have been putting this, you know, immense passion about, Boris, you know, practically wearing sackcloth and ashes, you know, he's right, of course, each death is terrible for those involved, but it's 40,000 deaths. That out of a population of 60 million is an infinite percentage. If you go back to a real pandemic, if we go back to the Black Death of the middle of the 14th century, you're looking there at a first impact when it hit England of about 20 to 25% of the population, with repeated returns, so that by the end of the 14th century, the population of England is half what it was at the beginning. What is unique, in other words, about this pandemic is, apart from the fact it's rather small, is that the damage that it does is self-inflicted.
The damage of this one, quite unlike the Black Death, going back to the 14th century, as he covers there, is that we've brought it on ourselves. The cure. When you look at, he said 40,000. I think it's not even quite 37,000 yet in the UK. In a nation that has a population of 66, 67 million. The United States has 330 million. 330 million people. And 8,000 people, 8,000 Americans are dying every day. In the UK, it's 17 or 1,800 every day. From all kinds of diseases, from all kinds of accidents. Worldwide, what is it? It's, I think, 153,000 every day. But this is what matters. This is the magical realism. It's the worst pandemic ever in history. Judging by the reaction, judging by the cure, one would assume this is the worst in world history. Now, he just mentioned the Black Death there, where it wiped out half of the population of England. Joel Hilliker last night in his trumpet brief, talking about the cure, he said the global health crisis wrought by COVID-19 has been dramatically eclipsed by the global economic crisis wrought by our response to COVID-19. Economic activity has cratered. Businesses are failing. Production has stopped. The United Nations predicts that even if the world rebounds financially over the rest of the year, extreme poverty will engulf as many as 132 million people, and those facing acute hunger will double to 265 million. All this, you see, in response, because of or wrought by the response to COVID-19. And then, as Mr. Hilliker brings out in his trumpet brief, there's quite a few people, namely the Green New Deal zealots, who are ecstatic. They love this. They are happy because of this suffering. Why? Well, because people aren't flying and we're saving the earth. People aren't traveling. Listen to, again, some more from this interview with historian David Starkey on May 16th, clip 4.
This is a very odd plague. It's rather small in scale, but it's gigantic in consequences because we have chosen to inflict a form of economic suicide on ourselves. There's no other way that one can describe it.
There's no other way to describe it. It's national suicide. It's economic suicide. Now, here's a historian, and he's commenting on news events of today. He goes back to those crucial weeks in mid to late March. He said that the UK government, Boris Johnson's government, they were just going to let the disease play out, build up the herd immunity in the UK. But then, well, there was one hospital in London that looked like it might be overwhelmed, like a few of those hospitals in northern Italy. And then along comes this absurd report. That's David Starkey's words, not mine. This absurd report from Neil Ferguson. All of this happened. It turned on a dime, really, over a weekend in mid-March. Here comes Ferguson's report. And then, of course, you have the calls to save the NHS. And Starkey says the NHS has always been the Conservative Party's Achilles heel. If they want to hold on to the votes, particularly in the northern parts of the UK, well, they've got to fund the NHS. They've got to praise the NHS. They've got to worship the NHS. So we've got to save the NHS. That was the goal initially. That's why they had to empty out the beds. We can't have our beloved National Health Service, we can't have it turn into what happened in northern Italy. Well, that was embarrassing to see those patients just laying down in the hallways of hospitals. That can't happen to the NHS, because the NHS is a tremendous success, a tremendous achievement. It's one of the greatest achievements in British history, some have said. Here's David Starkey again, clip 5.
Because the steps that were decided were to protect the face of the NHS at all costs.
Right.
The decisions are as follows. The first is you stop all forms of surgery and diagnostic testing completely. Cancer, heart disease, the lot. Mm. The National Health Service becomes the National COVID Service.
Right.
Secondly, you clear every bed that you can so that you can deal with the expected influx of COVID patients. This is when, of course, patients, usually elderly, the so-called bed blockers, very well have had COVID-19, get sent back to care homes. And so it's this series of astonishing clinical decisions, which of course are coupled with something else. You also shut down dentistry. Astonishing. You shut down all private medicine. You do a deal with the private hospitals. You close them down. And the result of this, of course, is that Britain was spared that humiliation. We did not have the scenes that were in Italy. We did not have the scenes that were in Spain. But there is a terrible price to pay, because we've got two other sets of deaths which are now catching up. There are the deaths of the people who should have been treated for cancer, who should have been treated for heart disease, who are also terrified to go to hospital because of COVID-19 and therefore are dying in droves. And then there is the final sting in the tail. As the deaths go down in hospitals, they go up in care homes. Yeah. Because why were we so casual, Peter, about care homes? Because they're not part of the NHS. They're not covered by that magic label.
Casual, you see, about the care homes because, well, those are private. It's not the national health system. It doesn't have the magic label of the NHS. So empty out the NHS beds and send them back into the care homes. And so where are they dying in droves? In the care homes. And then there's others too. He brings out the ones that are delaying non-essential surgeries and such, or people that aren't being screened for cancer. And yet still, every Thursday evening, it'll happen again tonight. Everyone turns up to celebrate the success of NHS. The power of the medical lobby. The power of the experts. It's like Mr. Armstrong said in The Plain Truth About Healing. This is in the booklet. Remember, God sentenced Adam's world to being cut off from him for 6,000 years. The medical profession is one of the world's humanly devised phases of a man-made civilization, cut off from God, but swayed and deceived by the devil. The medical profession, too, is of this world, and this certainly is not God's world. This is just a historian who's looking at what he sees, just like the national, or rather the state health official from Florida. Well, you know, the model said this, and this was happening or wasn't happening. We just decided to look at what we were seeing. That's what this historian's doing. He's looking at what he's seeing. A couple more clips here. Here's clip six.
One of the things that's happened throughout this crisis is that joke, it's a Nigel Lawson joke about the NHS being the nearest thing in Britain to a national religion. It's actually come true.
Yes,
we see popular observances. We see nurses being hailed as angels. We see we've stopped doing anything on Sunday. The Church of England has shut itself down. Instead, everybody gathers outside and claps for carers. But it's a false religion. We have, the way the NHS has behaved, and this is really going to get everybody very cross, the NHS behaved exactly in the way that the Catholic Church did under the threat of child abuse.
Right.
In other words, it tried to protect the institution, not the patient. And this is what's coming back to haunt us.
Wow, this is a historian who says, I know people are going to be cross with me on this, but here's what's happening. It's just like the Catholic Church. Under the threat of child abuse, They went to every length that they could to try to protect the institution instead of the lives of individuals. This is what's happened in the UK. They have protected the institution of the NHS. They have saved the NHS, even as tens of thousands of British subjects have died. State religion, Britain's state religion. He mentions the individual that called it the national religion. I think it was the one of those other commentators that we've quoted. I forget his name offhand, but a few have made this observation, and it's true. It's spot on. Here's another clip, clip 7.
And we also did something which I think is really unforgivable, which is that we lurched without a plan.
Yeah.
What I am describing now is not a plan to deal with an epidemic. It is a plan to save the face of the NHS.
So he goes on to say how that there really needs to be an inquiry of some kind. Following all this, we really need an investigation into the medical system, into the medical establishment, because it's there, after all, isn't it there to save lives? And yet it's ended up killing people in order to protect itself. The Cuomo strategy. The hospitals were saved, so much so that they're going out of business. How about that? The hospitals were saved. The hospital beds were kept empty. And tens of thousands of people died. One final clip, clip 8.
What the left wants to do is to turn the whole of human existence into a crisis that demands state management. It believes people should be paid by the state. It believes that the state is better at doing things than private industry.
Last comment, it was a little bit muddled, but he says that the left, they believe the state is better at controlling things than private industry. So in this unfolding crisis, so much of it now self-inflicted, he says there at the last that the left, the radical left, they are taking advantage of this. They want the government, they want the state to run everything. And this is a point that, again, Joel Hilliker made in his trumpet brief last night. Or to take the other example I gave you earlier, the Miami Herald, the magical reality that they create. Even when the evidence comes in, even when the facts prove them wrong, they still want to hold to their precious, precious narrative, their precious, precious religion. Speaking of the facts as they come in, there's a story here at the Telegraph. It says the virus fading in London as major hospitals report no deaths in 48 hours. This is London, the biggest city of the UK. No deaths in 2 days. And yet the article says here, however, Culture Secretary Oliver Dowden ruled out regional variation and easing lockdown with the intention to move as a whole nation. We can't let regions lift these restrictions. We're going to do this. We're already into this. We're going to do it together. We're going to come out of it together, whenever that is. It says the new Oxford analysis by Professor Carl Hennigan and Dr. Jason Oakey, it says at the Center of for Evidence-Based Medicine, show that there are 41 of the 131 acute NHS trusts have not reported a single death from coronavirus in the past 48 hours. So it's over, in other words. It's over. The curve hasn't just been flattened. It's been crushed. The overall, this is from Richard, the overall death rate dipped below the 5-year average at the end of April. And yet here we are, still in the lockdown. Cambridge has decided to shut down lectures for the next year. For the next year. Listen to this one from The Guardian. Just more lockdown madness. water stones. This is a perhaps one of the best-known bookstores in the UK. It says Waterstone is preparing to put books into quarantine after they had been handled by browsing shoppers as part of plans to reopen its stores when allowed. So now the books are in quarantine because they've been touched. They've been touched by human beings that might have COVID. It says the bookseller intends to ask shoppers to set aside any book they touch on trolleys, which will be wheeled away into storage for at least 72 hours before being put back on shelves in an effort to protect customers from the spread of coronavirus. Curve has been crushed, but the books, if they've been touched, they're off to quarantine for 3 days. 3 days. It says other measures to protect staff and customers will include Perspex screens in front of tills, limits on the number of shoppers, a one-way system in stores, and the closure of cafes as Waterstones adapts to physical distancing measures required by the government, along with thousands of other retailers. This is from The Guardian yesterday. This is the latest. May 20th, 2020. This is the very latest on the lockdown and the social distancing. Now we're quarantining the books. 72 hours. Fox News had a story yesterday about these 600 doctors who signed a petition, signed a letter to President Trump, asking him to end this national shutdown because of the side effects of this cure. The mass casualty incidents that are now starting to happen because of joblessness and other things, of course. It says the letter outlines a variety of consequences that the doctors have observed resulting from the coronavirus shutdowns, including patients missing routine checkups that could detect things like heart problems or cancer, increases in substance and alcohol abuse, and increases in financial instability that could lead to poverty and financial uncertainty, which is closely linked to poor health. It says, we are alarmed at what appears to be the lack of consideration for the future health of our patients, the doctors say in their letter. The downstream health effects are being massively, massively underestimated and underreported. This is an order of magnitude error. Here are doctors, 600 of them, that say there's a massive hoax here. And all these other things that go underreported. The magical reality, as DeSantis said to that group of reporters yesterday, you just hold on to your precious narrative, no matter what, no matter the evidence. Richard sent me this from the New York Times. This is commentary at the I think the weekly publication the New York Times puts out. But here's a journalist saying people are dying in hospitals, and here's their precious narrative. This is all that matters to them, except when they want to kind of joke about swabs and that sort of thing. They can kid and joke. The president can't. The president has to be very sobered. He has to be very serious. He can't joke. He can't criticize the press. He just has to follow along and pretend that the emperor is wearing this gorgeous array of regal attire. It says the official tolls are almost certainly an undercount. The morgues are overflowing. Those are the facts. But where is the grief, says the New York Times? How come there's not more people grieving about this? How come this isn't being treated more seriously? Says, when we first started getting the news out of Italy and then Spain with frightening daily numbers comparable with what is now happening in New York, that news seemed to be delivered with holy awe. In El País, for example, Each day's news was led by the previous day's dead, a number that was often in the paper's main headline. In the American papers, I usually have to do some searching to find how many people have died in the past day. The front pages here seem to often carry news of the financial markets or the political squabbles of the day. But what I want is to be directly confronted with the fact, the enormity, the irreducible sadness of all these deaths. In other words, I want Corona all the time. All things Corona all the time. That is the only story. And I'm shocked that every day's headline doesn't have the death count. It's not enough, you see, that you have the running tracker online. It's got to be on the front pages above the fold. Every newspaper, every day. There's not enough. There's not enough grief. There's not enough people dealing with the enormity of this, says the New York Times. Totally disinterested in all of these side effects, the downstream health effects of lockdown, as these doctors wrote to the president in their letter. It says the millions of casualties of a continued shutdown will be hiding in plain sight, but they will be called alcoholism, homelessness, suicide, heart attack, stroke, or kidney failure. It says in youths, it will be called financial instability, unemployment, despair, drug addiction, unplanned pregnancies, poverty, and abuse. These doctors who wrote to the president said, what we've seen now over the last 3 months is that no city, none, zero outside of New York City, has even been significantly stressed. Not one city has been significantly stressed by this global pandemic, except New York City, except the city in Governor Cuomo's state. Governor Cuomo, the administration presiding over the affairs of New York City, and of course, the state of New York, 14 times more deaths than all of Florida. 1,478 deaths per million. And yet, he's held up by your national media in the United States as a hero. He's a hero. And the villain is Ron DeSantis. The villain is Donald Trump. The hero in New York is Governor Cuomo. The hero, the object of worship in the UK, is the National Health Service. That has been saved, even as many thousands of people have died. You're listening to Stephen Fleury, and this is the Trumpet Daily Radio Show. If you'd like to email the program, you can submit feedback to td@kpcg.fm. We thank you for joining us on today's show, and we'll see you again tomorrow.